Welcome to Jewish History with Rabbi David Katz, connecting the human side to Jewish history. For sponsorship opportunities or to support this podcast, please visit our donate page at www.support.rabbidavidkatz.com.
Hi, it's Friday morning of Chol HaMoed, and it's early here in Baltimore. I want to hop around and do this on the Haftarah for our good friends in Gluck Plumbing who are in Eretz Yisrael right now, and therefore I promise them try to get this in. There's a 7-hour time difference, so I'm trying to get this in early as possible, so it'll be available in Israel. So thanks very much. And they're in Israel for Yom Tov. And of course, the Haftarah this week, cut right to the chase, is the dry bones. I think everybody's more or less familiar with that. And of course, the prophet Yechezkel is told, sees a vision, you know, that some of the Yeveshos, and then they come alive. And that's a mashal for Klal Yisrael. It is indeed a theme in Jewish history that the so-called dead bones come alive. It's who we are. Just think, for example, of 100 years ago in America. You know, would you imagine that you would have, you know, all this, you know, Torah world, as they call it today, and so forth, growing all the time in this country? It looked like the non-frum thing was the one on the way up, and the frum thing's on the way down, and now not. And what happened to that Somas Yevashos? Literally, if you went back 100 years ago in the year 1924, Orthodox Judaism in general of any sort seemed like a Somas Yevashos, right? Who were in the synagogues, old people, you know, for Darbani, you know what I mean. And now it's turned around differently. Same thing if you live in Israel. If you went back 100 years ago, a little more, all you had in Israel was Kavarim. And a few Jews, and very often old ones, who came to Israel to die. Yeah, I don't mean in a bad way, but, you know, that was a very frum thing to do. I had an ancestor myself in the 1830s who moved from Poland to Tzfas. There's only a, of course, he had bad luck. He moved to Tzfas just before the earthquake. He got killed in the earthquake. But nevertheless, that's what Eretz Yisrael was. It was a place for Atzamas HaYeveshos. And, you know, people used to go there, like I said before, to visit the sites. Wasn't a country, right? With millions of Jews. There are more Jews today, Canaan are, there are more Jews today in Israel than America. Nobody wants for Cedars. But in Jewish history, we have that Somas HaYeveshos. You know, we have this famous Haftarah. And we have this vision in front of us that you don't got by what's there now, but what could be tomorrow. You know what I mean? Ron Cutler, those people came over to America, it was that Somas HaYeveshos, but they said they'll live. And they did. So this is why this Haftarah always resonates. You understand? Because it's the reverse of any kind of yush. And you don't go by current facts, but by potential. The potential is always there. Potential is always there. So it's just a very interesting Haftarah on that level. And of course, it fits in for Pesach because that's exactly what Moshe Rabbeinu faced. V'lo shamal Moshe mikotzer ruach me'avodah kasha. Mikotzer ruach me'avodah kasha. The Jewish people in the time of Paro was Atzamas HaYeveshos. And completely understandable, correct? Completely understandable. Imagine the people who survived the Holocaust in 1945, you know, from Auschwitz, from Dachau, and all that, my father's generation. They literally were Atzamas HaYeveshos. True? They're 3/4 dead. Mentally, they were busted. I mean, you know, that's normal, considering what they underwent. It says Atzamas HaYeveshos. You'll say this, can these Atzamas HaYeveshos live? And yet, you know, that generation, whoever was able to, got out, got married, rebuilt a family, etc., etc. You know what I mean. And so that's why I say that Atzamas HaYeveshos is remarkable. And literally, for Moshe Rabbeinu, it's really something. Because he was dealing with Kotzer Ruach HaNevodah Kasha. And he was dealing with Atzamas HaYeveshos. And it's completely, you know, understandable, the exhaustion that the Jews felt. And that's the plain meaning of a Kotzer Ruach. Paro, of course, said Double and triple the workload, and then you won't have time to think of anything, which was true. You see? Which was true. So if not for a miraculous intervention, you know, which is what we celebrate in Pesach, they would expire as the Atzamas HaYavashos. And in general in history, there are famous historians, especially in 19th century, Jewish ones, Nachman Krochmal, for example, others, who tried to look at patterns in Jewish history, and they noticed that there's usually, as happens with many peoples and countries, a rise, a peak, and a fall. It's a rise, and there's a peak, and a fall. The only thing is, I'll give you an example. Take, for example, the Roman Empire. They had a rise, then had a peak, and then had a fall. Or the Babylonians and the Persians and the Assyrians and, you know, Egyptians and so forth and so forth. The only difference is, this was pointed out by Krochmal in the 1820s or whatever, that with other countries, they have a rise and a peak and a fall, and they have a fall. Naflo lo siko lo sosiv kum. They're gone. The Roman Empire ain't here anymore. You know what I'm saying? On the other hand, in the history of the Jewish people, just interesting, if you look at the patterns, it's a rise and a peak and a fall. And then a rise again. You see? And like I said before, in our lifetime, or at least in mine, you've seen the rise of from Judaism here and there. You know that speech. Okay. So this is why Yecheskel, who's living the time of the Churban, says, as far as he's concerned, it's over. The Babylonians destroyed Beis HaMikdash, exiled the Jewish people. There was nobody left at all in Israel. Think about that. And how did the Bnei Yisrael feel? The survivors went to Babel. They say in Yecheskel, they say, it's all over. How does it work? Eved Shemash, Arabo, Macharo, Eved Lami. No, we belong to Nebuchadnezzar now. They couldn't fathom the fact that the Beis HaMikdash is talking destroyed and the king of Yehuda is wiped out, doesn't exist anymore, and every Jew is kicked out of Israel. And yet, and in spite of what I just said, not that long afterwards is going to come a revival. The Atzamas HaYavashos are going to come back to life, which happened 70, 80 years later, as you know, Kates Babel, Zerubbabel, Lekesh Shivim Neshati. This is why, like I said before, you look at the story that Atzamas HaYavashos, it grabs people. And I'm sure there are many people themselves. I don't know, the Clark family, other, I know my family. Wasn't that long ago was Atzamas HaYavashos. And like I said before, and yet they rebuilt. You see? This is a theme of Jewish history. It's a good one to know during this time because we're under attack. Klal Yisrael in general is under attack. The state of Israel and the Am Yisrael and in America and elsewhere is all under attack. And what do our enemies want from us? They want us to go back being Atzamas HaYavashos. You see? If the Jewish people are Atzamas HaYavashos, nobody's got a problem with them. There's no Israel, there's no this, no Yiddishkeit. And the Jews are assimilating and converting. That's how they like it. Our enemies like the Atzamas HaYavashos. That's how it goes. They don't like if there is any kind of revival after Atzamas HaYavashos, will these bones live, right? And the Gidim and everything will come back. And they'll put on filling again and so forth. Now, excuse me. Yeah. I ate too much on Kalamoy. Now, whenever it comes to this Gemara, I'm sorry, when it comes to this Haftorah, this passage in Yecheskel, I'm always reminded of a gra that I mentioned. I don't know if I mentioned before, but I was told by the boss that it's not refried beans, so I'm going to do it. And that is, there's a famous gemara at the beginning of Pesach. I'm sure everybody remembers this. I'm sure most people listening to this podcast anyway remember this. That the gemara tells a story about Yehuda ben Becerra. And Yehuda ben Becerra is this interesting figure. The historians are all trying to figure out who that is because they think there's one or two or three of them. Because of the chronological problems, so you find a different place in the Gemara. Nevertheless, the family B'nai Becerra is very much connected with Pesach. I know you'll remember this, because that Hillel became famous, where it's in 7th Perek or 6th Perek, wherever it is, in Pesachim.
because in the time of Hillel, when he was brand new, he moved to Israel from Bavel, Hillel of Bavli, the famous Hillel. And it turned out that Pesach, the first Seder was on a Saturday night, which means you have to, the question is, do you shech the Karban Pesach once on Saturday on Shabbos itself? So, in other words, it's Pesach Docha Shabbos, Karban Pesach. And nobody knew the answer, right? Now, the reason they didn't know the answer is that there was no Gea, because once upon a time, long ago, you used to have a Sanhedrin. And when you had a Sanhedrin, they sort of have dealer's choice whether to declare Rosh Chodesh. You have one or two days, correct? Rosh Chodesh is always either a Monday or Tuesday, or a Tuesday or Wednesday, or Wednesday or Thursday. You know what I mean? No, the moon, new moon could be first day to second day. So they always had that one day leeway. And usually the Sanhedrin bases the day they declare Rosh Chodesh on astronomical calculations, on scientific reasons. But there's enough wiggle room in the Jewish calendar that you can play around once in a while. And one of the reasons that they might say, want to declare the new, in other words, let's say that it could be, for example, either Sunday night or Monday night is Rosh Chodesh. It could be either Sunday or Monday night. And let's say Adim show up and they say, we saw the moon on Sunday night. Fine. It is within the authority of the Beis Din, if they want to, the Sanhedrin, that they'll say like this, we're declaring Rosh Chodesh Monday night. They just came and told you Sunday night. I get that. But the Sanhedrin has the power, if they choose to, for policy reasons, to say it's going to be Monday night. What would be a reason like that so that the Seder shouldn't fall out on Saturday night? You get what I'm saying? Precisely, so we shouldn't run into the question of is Pesach Dos Shabbos. And when the Shonim Kitikunan, when things were regular, he's had a Sanhedrin, so they always, you know, calculated the calendar that way. For some reason, in the story of Tom Hillel, there was a mess up, and all of a sudden, the Seder is on Motzei Shabbos, and the first Seder. And therefore, the question becomes, what do you do on Shabbos itself, on Saturday day? I remember the Doris Rishonim, the historians, the From historian says, it was a time of hordes of Herod, and Herod wiped out the Sanhedrin. This is his theory. It's a theory, right? He wiped out Sanhedrin, and therefore, the regular Sanhedrin wasn't there. And the leadership of the Frum community, listen closely, devolved on a family called B'nai B'seira. So our hero today that I mentioned is from this family. And I'm telling you what the Doris Rishonim says. And these were good tzaddikim, good people. And they like stepped up to the plate, not to be the Sanhedrin, but to be there in emergency basis to try to run the Jewish religion. And in the reign of the Jewish Stalin, which was Herod, is very tough. And again, they were public-minded citizens, and they ran into, a tough situation. And they weren't necessarily the leading Talmidei Chacham of the time, but they were good people. And they messed up on the calendar that the Adim came and it declared it would be on Sunday night, for example. And then they realized, that means that the Pesach is going to be in a Motzei Shabbos. And then they ran into the question, do you do the Karban Pesach on Saturday or not? Is it Docha Shabbos? And they did not know the answer. And you know the story. And they're trying to figure, there was Chizis Cheshvan, that Cheshvan. Pesach is yes, Docha Shabbos, but it's not Docha Shabbos. Never came up practically before. And then Hillel Bavli was there, and he said, I learned by Shmaya Naftalian, and I know the answer is it is Docha Shabbos. And then they said, now, this is to their credit, they said like this, if you know that, you're a bigger Talmud Chacham than us, we quit, you take our place. And that's like the only time you ever find a rabbi says, I'm serious about this. Rabbi says, since you're a bigger Talmud Chacham than me, you take my job. When are you ever going to find a Rosh Hashiva today? Build a Mishiva and the guy's smart enough, he said, you take over the job. The only other case I can think of in Jewish history is in Spain in the 10th century. Remember, was it Moshe ben Chanoch from the four captives? You know, he got off the boat for the pirates and all. Remember that story in Cordoba? And he came to the shul, and you know, he knew the answers, and the rabbi said, well, then you take over. Right? It's very rare. I think Rabbi Yonah Nossi even said, I could do anything anybody else could do, but I couldn't do what the B'nai B'Sera did. Right? If somebody was a bigger Talmud Chacham than me, I couldn't give up the Nossi job, which is just being honest. Okay? So the Hillel became Hillel, became famous from this encounter with B'nai B'Sera, who you see from this story were very high-minded, and very honest, and so forth. Now, in that context, during the time of Hillel, which is the last, 70, 80 years, 90 years of the Beis HaMikdash. And there's a famous story in the Gemara Pesachim, where it says, there was a guy who went and ate Karm Pesach. Now, he disguised himself as a Jew. He said he's Jew, and he went and ate the Karm Pesach. And he made fun of the Jews because it says, that the Torah says a guy can't eat the Karm Pesach. And I did. And I had the best. So I'm like, and obviously, he was going back to Goyland, to Syria, and was talking about it. So he said, you know, I made a business visit to Jerusalem, and guess what? You know, I passed as a Jew, and I had a laugh on all of them. I'm like, you've been saved, huh? Here that Ben Becerra. So the story is that Yehuda Ben Becerra said, he said something tricky. He said, did they give you from the Aliyah, from the tail, which you're not supposed to eat? Amalai lo. Now the guy didn't know that. Kislak the Hossam Amalu Tzavim Aliyah. So he said, when you get to go back second time to fool the Jews again, ask for the tail. Kislak Amalai Aliyah Tzavali. When he came there the second Pesach, this guy, who was a trickster, and he said, let me have the Aliyah. And they said, Aliyah L'Gaboh Salka. Right? The Aliyah is not for you. That goes L'Gaboh. That gets burned. Armalei, not Armalach, Amriyudim Sarah. Right? Who told you to ask for the Aliyah? They said, Amriyudim Sarah. And as a result, they discovered his identity. The Kutlu, when they killed him. And they said, very famously, they wrote a letter to Yehuda ben Becerra, who lived in Syria, in Nitzivin, in Syria, Nesibis. And they said, Shalom lach Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra, at benitzivin tzudachsa prutzcha b'Yerushalayim. Shalom lach Rabbi Becerra, you live far away in Syria, but your net is cast as far as Jerusalem. In other words, through your chachma, you're able to expose this phony. So Tosis famously asks, he's very famous, that Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra shall all arego. How come Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra himself didn't go arego? Right? You know, Karm Pesach has a mitzvah to say Sheish Bakar, so why didn't he go? So, he gave several answers. Yesh lo mishloya karka, maybe didn't any land in Israel, and you, in order to be chayav in the Karm Pesach, you have to own a landowner. Ozakni nechol ha'alcha baraglov, or maybe he was too old to walk. Inam nitzim chutz la'aretz, maybe nitzim was too far away. All right. So, one of the terutzim, you know how it works in Tosis, there are three answers, each one stands by itself. So one of the first answer is the Shalohi Lo Karka. So I remember it's very famous that the Vilna Gaon says, whoever it wasn't Vilna Gaon, but somebody asked, what do you mean didn't have any karka? Every Jew, they say in Kedushin, every Jew has, by being Jewish, you have Dalai Lamas in Eretz Yisrael. Right? Every Jew has Dalai Lamas in Eretz Yisrael, just being Jewish. So that makes you a landowner. So that's enough. You should be chayim karm pesach. So what does Tosis mean when he said lohoy lo karka? Different, a lot of different answers and stuff like that. It's a Mishnah Melech, whatever. So there's a famous grah. At least let me put it this way. I don't know if it's famous or not. For some reason, it sticks in my mind. I don't remember all the grahs, but this one sticks in my mind. And he said like this. Check out the story of Atzamas Hayavashis. I think it's Sanhedrin, wherever it is, where they discuss, the vision that we have in our Haftorah today, is that something that happened really, or just a prophetic vision, right? Now, even if it's a prophetic vision, it's still very important. A Nevuah has its own integrity. You get it? Something doesn't have to be physically true for it to be true. That's a metaphysical reality. As a matter of fact, from a certain point of view, the metaphysical reality is actually more important than the physical reality. So notice when a Navi sees a Nevuah, it's not something happened, b'poel, but it's not a fantasy either, right? Fantasy is fine. If you want to write fiction, no problem with that. As long as you identify it as fiction. It's a subject of your imagination. But a Nevuah is not a subject of a Navi's imagination. It represents real communication from upstairs. And so, on some observations, how you have a Nivra, lo how you have a little Nivra. You know? Now, of course, from a philosophical Maimonidean point of view, it's more comfortable to say lo how you have a little Nivra. Because after all, it's a supernatural miracle. And so those who have trouble with miracles, I'm serious, those who have trouble with miracles, you can always say, is this a mushel? You know? In other words, God did say this to the prophet, Yecheskel, but it doesn't mean it actually happened that some of the came alive. It's just a metaphor, like the way I was saying before, that Jews, somehow or other, even after going through terrible times and they're all busted apart, have a revival. Like I mentioned before, after the Holocaust or Israel or the time of Moshe Rabbeinu and so forth, there's nothing wrong with saying that, okay? Which is why it's one of the days in the Gemara. However, the Gemara goes on to say that one of them got up and said like this, it's not a mushel, it really happened, it's a historical event, and I, myself, wear the tefillin of my ancestor, who's from that Samas Yavishas. Right? No, the tefillin I have from that Samas Yavishas, which again, reminds us very much, I'm sure there are people listening to this, who have the tefillin or something like that, from the father, grandfather, great-grandfather, whatever, who went through the Holocaust. The mushel. Right? Isn't that true? I'm sure some people do it. Yeah, they got it fixed or whatever. And it's, you know, very nice. A person says, like, I am wearing the tefillin of my ancestor. Meaning that the Masorah continues through me. I'm wearing the tefillin of my ancestor. And so who was the one who said that I'm wearing the tefillin of my grandfather or whoever, whatever ancestor? Our buddy, Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira. Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira. Now, what does that mean? He was descended from the people who died and then came alive in that Tumas Yavashis. Because in the Haftarah, there's a certain valley. The God said, look in the valley, and that's where the dry bones come alive. So there were a whole bunch of dead bones in a valley. And he's saying, I'm descended from them. So the Vilna Gaon said like this. So first of all, it's Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira. Second of all, who are the Atzamas Yavashis? And the Gemara said over there, I think in Sanhedrin, that there's a Shevet Ephraim. We all know the Shevet Ephraim busted out early. They weren't supposed to. What, 30 years early, something like that? and they got wiped out. That's the story in B'Shalach when it says, you know this in Rashi, that it says, V'lonochem elhim derech eretz plishin. Ki amar elhim ben yinochem am berosa mochama v'shov mitzrayma. That the people get scared when they see the dead bodies. What dead bodies? Dead bodies killed by the Philistines. What's that? There's not in the Chumash. They say, well, yeah, but what happened was that the Shevet Ephraim, right? And you know this. The Shevet Ephraim got out early, or they busted out early. They said, we're leaving here. We're going to Israel now. It was the wrong time. It's understandable they wanted to do it. And they got killed by the Philistines. And so you came to a certain place, all the dead bodies. And in B'Shalach, the Rebbeinu was afraid, the Jews on the Madrega that they were at, if they'll see all these dead bodies, they'll say, uh-oh, the Philistines are going to kill us also. And therefore, you know, it's going to be a disaster, and people run back to Egypt. Because we don't want to get killed either. Right? We don't get killed either. I hear that. I get it. So, Sakta Gra, so that means if you think about it, those people in the Shevet Ephraim, it wasn't a whole tribe of Ephraim, it was a group, right? And by the way, it's very interesting, if you think about it, why Dafka the Shevet Ephraim? I mean, let's put it this way. If I was going to ask you the question, which Jews would run out earliest, you wouldn't come up with Shevet Ephraim. because Ephraim was the son of Joseph, and Osnas. So they were born in Egypt. They were most Egyptianized of all the tribes, and live in lap of luxury. So why would they, right? I mean, you know, they're the children of the viceroy, and the grandchildren, the great-grandchildren of the viceroy. Why would the Shevet Ephraim leave early? Unless you say, if you think about it, Adrabah, because they lived so high in the hog in Egypt, when they were enslaved, it was like a super shock. You get it? In other words, like if Hitler took somebody that was a poor Jew that was starving anyway, of course it's terrible, but wasn't such a change in Madrega. But Hitler also took people in Eastern Europe who were millionaires. It doesn't matter. And so somebody living in lap of luxury, now he's in Auschwitz, it was like, freak out. You understand? It's unbearable. I think I told you, my father, me, myself, and I, my father lived before the war in Lithuania, and he married this rich girl who didn't have a father. There were two sisters, and they had like a department store chain in Lithuania once upon a time. So my father didn't come from a rich family, but the other, Mechutin, no, he married one daughter, and another guy named Fisher married another daughter. He came from a Chasheva family, a rich family. And so, Ho'amun Malay Tolo, he was raised in luxury. And he married a girl like luxury. No problem. But then came Hitler, and then they ended up in the camp. My father told me, he said he was with the same guy that came in the concentration camp, I think in Stutthof. It was such a shock for this guy all of his life to live in luxury. And now he's by Hitler as the reverse of luxury. It was so disgusting, he like died in 24 hours. Meaning he just stopped living. You understand? No, I'm checking out. He didn't commit suicide. He just checked out. Chas v'chalila shouldn't happen to anybody. But the shock and the contrast between the high life on the one hand and the shock of being a slave or slave laborer or Hitler or something like that, it was so extreme. Is unbearable. So think about this. How long were the Jews slaves? 86 years. When did the Shevet Ephraim bust out? I think they, if I remember correctly, 30 years early, too early. Okay? So they were there for about 50, 55 years, and they couldn't take it anymore. And so they left early, and they got killed because they didn't wait for the right moment. You know, like Satmar, you know, wait for the right moment. So what happened? Zuck the Grub. If that's the case, these people, this Chalik and the Shevet Ephraim that ran out and got killed, they never got to Eretz Yisrael. So they never inherited any karka. When the Jews came to Israel in time of Yeshua Benun, is Shiva Shekovshu, Shiva Shekholku. The land was divided up. In fact, according to, by divine will, you know, by a Gyro. Who gets what? That became the ancestral land. So me, right? Well, I'm a Kohen. I don't know how it works with the Shevet Levi. But even the Shevet Levi had so and so many cities, right? But let's say, for argument's sake, I came from Binyamin or from Yehuda or something like that, for argument's sake. I don't know who my ancestors would be. But I know way back when, I had somebody who was part of the Nochle Haaretz. And therefore, as a result of that, I have some Dalanamas in Israel. That's what the Gemara means in Kedusha. Everybody is Dalai Lama's in Israel. Because you descended from the original people who inherited Israel. And so even if that person has thousands of descendants, everybody got a little bit, at least. And for that reason, you're Chayev on a Karm Pesach because you're a landowner. But Yudim and Sarah Dafka was the Grub points out, Yudim and Sarah Dafka was one of those who was from the Shevet Ephraim. That's the meaning of the dry bones. And therefore, he's one of those who never got to Israel. And as a result of never getting to Israel, he doesn't have Dalai Lamas. So that's what Tosis means when they said, Ein Ami Karka. It's a good line, right? I would point out, Yehuda Seir is famous in history in ways you don't usually think about. For example, he's the guy who, because of him, the Valkyrie doesn't have to go to Mikveh every day anymore, like they used to go. Right? The Hasidim do whatever, but you know, you don't have to go to Mikveh every day, halachically. But once upon a time, you did. Right? But he says, Divrei Torah Makabel Tumah. He's the one who says, very interestingly, that the, what do you call it? That the B'nai Korach are coming back. It's not so, right? Rabbi Kiva says, B'nai Korach ain't lam chila golem havo. And Yudah Ben says, yes, they do. It's interesting. Coming from the Ephraim background, you can kind of see he would say, there's no such thing as they're never coming back. That's what it seems to me. He's the one who says that on Yom Kippur, you don't list your sins out loud. You say them quietly. Again, coming from his ancestry, you can sort of see that. You don't have to go around and say like this, I'm from the B'nai Ephraim. Kach nearly. And a lot of other things like that. So if you're interested in what I'm saying, go look up Yehuda Maseri. You'll see all kind of interesting things. I remember Aaron Hyman has in his book, Told Us Nine by Mariam, which is online in Hebrew books. It's a very long business on Yehuda Maseri the first versus Yehuda Maseri the second. And, may I say, Yehuda Maseri is the one who says that what does it mean, Mikotze Ruch Me'avod HaKasha? It doesn't mean that they work too hard. It means Kotze Ruch Avodah Kasha means Avodah Zarah. So in other words, coming from his background, especially living in the Tzibim, but also in general, coming Shevet Ephraim, he's saying, when Moshe Rabbeinu said, the time has come to leave, Mikotze Ruch Avodah Kasha. This is my opinion. Why does he say Kotze Ruch Avodah Kasha means Avodah Zarah as opposed to just plain Pashup Shot? That they were, they were wiped out, and they couldn't listen because they were busted in spirit. If you come from the Shevet Ephraim, especially once you leave, there's no such thing as Kotzer Ruach, in the sense that anyone, everybody wants to leave. My ancestors, he would say, busted out. They didn't say Kotzer Ruach. They were so depressed that no one to leave our slavery. Everybody wants to leave slavery, right? If they didn't listen to Moshe Rabbeinu, and this is 30 years after his ancestors had perished. If he said they don't want to leave, must be this because they're hooked onto Avodah Zarah, they're addicted to Avodah Zarah. That's a different thing altogether, right? It's not a regular Kotzer Ruach that, the slavery has robbed us of our will and our spirit because his ancestors were not like that. That's what I think, anyway. Anyway, I'm going to send this out now so we'll get to Israel on time and to everybody else. So thank you once again to Gluck Plumbing and... I understand it's very hot in Israel. I hope this will cool things down. Anyway, everybody should have a good Moed.
For sponsorship opportunities or to support this podcast, please visit our donate page at www.support.rabbidavidkatz.com.